Hi, this is Max McAllister from Traction Dynamics, and you're listening to MotoGP OD.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to MotoGP OD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. I am your host, Bob Hayes, and today is Friday, May 5th, 2006. This is show number 57. Happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone out there. I think that you should all go have a Corona beer to celebrate Cinco de Mayo and support your favorite sport at the same time, because you may well have noticed that Corona is heavily involved in motorcycle road racing, both in World Superbike and in MotoGP and in AMA, too. So, you know, let's have a Corona. Or two. And despite the big ad there for Corona, this episode of MotoGP OD is actually sponsored by Komodo Gear. Komodo Motorcycle Gear is the result of the passion and combined efforts of motorcycle enthusiasts that have used their collective experience and applied it to their products. They race, they ride, and they cruise. All Komodo products come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee and a 5-year warranty against manufacturing defects. For more information, call 888-KOMODO-G or visit www.komodogear.com. All right, we got some good stuff today. First off, we're going to start with several reader emails. It was kind of a big week of email this past week. I got quite a few, and just having come back from the trip to Vegas, and I got several interesting ones that I'd kind of like to pass on about a couple different subjects. After that, we're going to talk with racer Kenny Noyes and then Liam Schubert. I managed to get a hold of both Kenny and Liam while they were in Spain on the road to Albacete circuit for Kenny to race in the CEV, which is the Spanish National Championship, stands the Campeonato España de Velocidad or something like that, which is the Spanish Championship of Speed, basically, and it's their national superbike type series. And Kenny races in the Formula Extreme class there, which is pretty close to our super stock here in America for the AMA, and sort of in between super stock and superbike, and a pretty much equivalent of that in World Superbike. Now, both of those calls were a lot of fun. They had a lot of good information to pass on. There was a little background noise. I'm going to go ahead and apologize in advance for it. They were in a restaurant, but you can still hear what they're saying. They've got some really good info, and it's always fun talking to both of those guys, so we're going to play them anyway. Now, why don't we go ahead and get on to those reader emails? Alrighty, I've got 4 or 5 reader emails that I want to go over here in no particular order. Like I said, I got quite a few good emails this week and want to share them. First one is from Mark Bothy, who is the flagger at the OMRA races, and I got talking to Mark a little bit this past few weeks, and he sent me an email about a Nikki Hayden Super Motard video that it was on Google. So I'm going to post the link on the video.google.com, and it's Super Motard, and he says, Mark has this to say, Bob, this is a great video. It shows you how much control Nikki Hayden has. Watch Max Biaggi, he can't do it. He tries, but nothing. Also, at the end, watch Nick go from wheelie to stoppie and downshift in the stoppie and then throw it in the corner. So basically, as you can tell, there's Nikki Hayden and Max Biaggi and a couple other guys riding super motobikes. And it's actually a pretty cool little video. So I'll put a link to that on the MotoGPOD.com website. And then our next reader email is from Alan Fleming, who is the host of the World Superbike Podcast, WSBK Pod, which is at wsbkpod.com. And Alan has this to say, among some other things. On the podcast, one of your listeners asked about fly-by-wire and the RC211V. And then Alan goes on to tell me, Sportrider touched on this in their April 06 issue with Alan Cathcart testing all the MotoGP bikes. He said that the twist grip is directly connected to all 5 throttle bodies, but that the onboard computer can adjust things with traction control, power shifting, launch control, and wheelie control. Presumably, the interface between these isn't completely faultless, given Hayden's big wheelies at Qatar, or cutter, as Jim Race likes to call it. Nonetheless, if you technically define fly-by-wire as having the computer control the butterfly openings on the throttle bodies, then the RC211V is not fly-by-wire. And you may remember in my last episode, I guess it was, we had an email about the RC211V, and I quoted a passage from I quoted a little snippet from Julian Ryder's 2005 season guide, MotoGP season review, where he says that the WCM had the last real throttle cables. The actual exact quote was, the WCM had the last genuine throttle cables in pit lane. So then I did a little more research because I knew I'd read something somewhere about this. And I found in the 2004 edition of Julian Ryder's MotoGP season review, he's talking about the, now this would have been about the 2003 bike, so stuff has certainly changed since then, but this was presumably correct for 2003. The most interesting subassembly of which Honda released details is what they call the Honda Intelligent Throttle Control System. And it's an acronym for the electromechanical system that limits throttle butterfly valve opening in the lowest three gears. Now here's the key part. Input from the twist grip goes to what is effectively a small scale car rear axle differential, which also has input from an electric motor under the control of the engine management system. In first gear, throttle opening is limited to 50% of the maximum, second 60%, and in third gear, 80%. HRC say that a pure fly-by-wire would have been easier to achieve, but this system is fail-safe and the costs are reduced, an important factor for customer teams. So, thank you very much to Julian Ryder for letting me quote from his book without actually knowing that I'm quoting from his book, and hopefully that clarifies it. It sounds like it's a very much a hybrid. It's not a true fly-by-wire. Alan is right. Thank you for pointing that out. And hopefully that clears things up. And if it is different this year now for the 2006 bikes, and anybody knows out there exactly what's going on with those Honda bikes, feel free to send us an email and we'll mention it. Although I have kind of a feeling that that's probably not going to happen because we so rarely find out exactly what is going on with these MotoGP bikes. So thank you, Alan, for that email. Next email. Oh, I'm kind of going in no, like I said, no particular order. Another thing that I mentioned was in my mini rant about MotoGP.com and their bling-infested interface was, when I mentioned that, I got an email from PopMonkey@RideOn2.com, and he says, hey, I noticed you mentioned the CPU eatery of MotoGP.com, and you may want to point people to, and there's a thread on RideOn2.com. And that thread was something along the lines of the MotoGP.com CPU eater. I will put a link to that on the website as well, MotoGPOD.com, or you can find the thread on RideOn2.com in their MotoGP forum. Basically, it's instructions on how to use the Firefox web browser with a special add-on that nicely sort of eliminates some of the nastiness that you do get from MotoGP.com, and it works very well with Crash.net as well. And please, MotoGP.com, Dorna, CrashNet, if you're listening, pay no attention at all to this section of the podcast. Now on to our next reader email, which maybe I should have read before the one about the MotoGP.com CPU eatery, because it kind of ties in with it. But in any event, this is from Sean Gibson. MotoGPOD listener Sean Gibson writes, among other things, I am really upset with the Speed Channel's coverage of the MotoGP races. I don't understand why they can't devote an extra half hour of coverage to the race so that we can hear more about the qualifying and other things that have taken place prior to the start. I have a friend who is a big Formula One fan, and after watching a race with him, I can't believe how much time they spend before and after the race that is televised. My second issue is how bad the announcers are. He's talking about Nick Harris here and Marcus Brax. You finally touched on that right after this weekend's race. They never seem to know who the rider is when someone crashes or goes off the track, and they have no information to share with us that we already don't know. And last, the video coverage is usually very poor. The first race of the season, they continued to follow the leaders around the track when all of the action was going on with the riders behind them for most of the race. Then in the second race of the season, there was great action for the lead throughout the entire race, and they spent half of their time showing us Pedrosa, who had no bearing whatsoever on the outcome. I really thought that because this sport is so much bigger in Europe, that the announcers and coverage would be great. If you watch the AMA coverage here in the state, you know how much better the guys that cover that are. I just hope that if you agree, then maybe you can use your forum to somehow bring it to their attention of Speed Channel to at least extend their coverage a half hour. Maybe we can all start emailing them and complaining them. Well, I had to reply to Sean on that, you know, one, Sean, if you think I have any kind of pull whatsoever like that with Speed Channel, I am sorry, but you are sadly mistaken. And believe me, there have been multitudes of motorcycle racing fans that have complained to Speed on Speed's own forum at insider.speedtv.com over and over and over again, saying pretty much the same things with you that you're saying, and it's just not happening, and it's not likely to happen, to be honest with you. I mean, I would love to see MotoGP get more coverage. I'd love to see a situation like you get with Formula One here in the United States, where they get the video feed, but we have American announcers overdubbing, you know, and announcing the race. That announcing team that we have from On Speed TV for Formula One of Bob Varsha, Steve Matchett, and David Hobbs is excellent, very entertaining, and I'd like to see the MotoGP equivalent doing a good job here in America, but it ain't going to happen. So I'm pretty much thankful for the hour we do get, and I'm also, thank you very much, Sean. I'm kind of flattered that you think I could somehow have any pull like this with Speed TV. But until motorcycles in general are so much more widely accepted in the United States and motorsport as well, I mean, all motorsport is relatively low rated unless it's the Indy 500, and even that, it ain't going to happen. Now, on to the other comments that you made about the announcers with Nick Harris. Well, you're not alone. Nick Harris, he does have his good moments. He actually does. He's always enthusiastic. I mean, you can't fault Nick Harris for that, and that's nice. But his coverage at Istanbul was terrible. It was really actually a low point. I don't know if it has something to do with Marcus, you know, the new sidekick and changes that they've made there or what, but it was bad. I mean, he had calling a pass when Pedrosa passed, I believe it was Melandri, and he says, you know, Hayden just passed Melandri. And I mean, said it like three or four times in a row and then sort of never corrected himself. And then other situations where a rider would be passed and he would say that the guy who just got passed was about to pass, you know, the person who just did the passing. And I can't think of the specific riders. I think one was Hayden and, whatever, whoever it was, it was just all through the Istanbul race that was over and over like that. And I'm not saying I can do a whole lot better when you're watching a race, especially one like that Istanbul race was. There's a lot of lead changes, a lot of things going on. It's a very, very difficult job. So I sympathize with Nick Harris like that. On the other hand, I'm not a paid professional that's supposed to be, you know, seriously paying attention and has a producer sort of mumbling in his ear and has a color man also, you know, that should be helping. So really, I hope that we see some better announcing than what we saw at the Istanbul race. I have been lucky enough to hear the Eurosport races once or twice, and Toby Moody and Julian Ryder and Randy Mamola do such a better job. I wish we could get that. Now, that's one thing that Speed probably could do, maybe. I don't understand all the legal ramifications and so forth, but Speed TV, why don't you look into that? Get us the Eurosport feed. And then when you mentioned, Sean, the video coverage, that's all done by each country, pretty much. So the directors, you know, the Italian director is going to show a lot of Rossi. The Spanish director is going to show a lot of the Spanish riders, et cetera, et cetera. I actually thought they did a really good job at Istanbul. They held the aerial shots long enough so that, you know, they weren't cutting so fast. A lot of times these cuts, they go so fast from one camera angle to the next because they're feeding the modern short attention span TV watcher that, you know, can't bear to watch the same angle for more than about 10 seconds. And it just gets confusing. But sometimes the, what they need to do is just, you know, go to an aerial shot and stick with it, or go to the onboard and stay on board the whole lap, which actually I've noticed they've been doing this year. Stuff like that. That's what I like to see. But it, actually, just well, the onboards mostly sucked. Okay, well, that's enough about that email. Thank you very much, Sean. I appreciate the kind comments and the input. And let's move on to our last email from Brian, who asked that I do not use his last name. And Brian says, among other things, commenting about my last show, he said, "Rossi not good in the rain? I must take exception. One only need look at the Donington race last year to realize that Valentino has, riding in the wet, completely sussed out. He won in China in horrific conditions also in 2005. Yes, you're right, very much, Brian. And, you know, I kind of misspoke. What I kind of meant to say is that Valentino Rossi does not have the same reputation as being like the kind of guy that sort of prays for rain, which for a while there, Sete Gibernau was getting that reputation of like, man, this guy can do fine in the wet, but he's not that great in the dry. And to an extent, I think Kenny Roberts somewhat has that reputation, which was largely because of the Suzuki he was riding. You know, the rain was the great equalizer, and Kenny Roberts could you know, kill that advantage that the more powerful bikes had, you know, by taking advantage of the rain. Valentino Rossi is extremely comfortable in the wet. You are right. It's just that he shines so much all the time that it's not like he's a big rain rider. So I know what I said was, yeah, Valentino's never been generally regarded as a rain rider, but that's not kind of what I meant. I didn't mean he sucks in the rain. I just didn't mean that it's like a big strength. Does that make sense? It kind of doesn't. I know what I'm trying to say, but I'm kind of having troubles with the words. But you're right. Anybody that has doubts about Rossi's rain riding ability, go back to Jerez. Jerez in 2004, I believe it was, and it was a wet race, and he was almost high-sided, and he was up and completely out of this, off the motorcycle. I mean, his knees and feet were above the seat. You know, he was not just like a sort of a small bounce. He was off the motorcycle, just holding on, and managed to keep it on track and everything. The guy can ride in the wet or the dry. Just seems to be having a little bit of a chatter problem this year, but I do think that they're going to fix that one. Alrighty, that's enough for the reader email. I hope you enjoyed that. Why don't we take a brief time out for a small word and then move on to our interview with Kenny Noyes.
Calling all Canadians. Do you ride a bike, on the back of a bike, or daydream about either one? Do you like to lumber along on a Sunday morning or scrape your pegs in the twisties? Do you like to dodge sand dunes or ford rivers? Well, if you answered yes to any of the above, then why not give a listen to the Twisted Wrist podcast? The Twisted Wrist is the first podcast dedicated to the Canadian rider from a Canadian perspective. So why not toss on your jacket and gloves, lace up your boots, strap on your lid, and plug into the Twisted Wrist? Your ticket to Northern Adventure is at twistedwrist.blogspot.com. The Twisted Wrist, podcasting with a mouthful of bugs.
All right, I got Kenny Noyes on the phone. Kenny's over in Spain right now. He's on his way to Albacete, right, Kenny?
Yes, we are.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, Kenny. Glad to have you on the show.
Glad to be with you guys over there.
All righty. And now, real quick, why don't we touch on what you're doing this weekend, which riding in the CEV for Folk Endurance, number 35 there in the Spanish National Championships, correct, which we talked about a few weeks ago, but maybe a little update for what's going on in that. So what's happening this weekend at Albacete there, Kenny?
Well, this weekend's the first round of the Spanish Road Racing Championship, and we're on our way down there now. Join up with the team. We're already there, set up since yesterday, and we'll be going out there on the track and seeing how the new Yamaha is going to perform against the tough competition over here.
Great. And so they run it sort of the same kind of format that we see in other series, where you've got the whole 3-day weekend of qualifying and races, or?
Yeah, in fact, the series is organized by Dorna, who are the same people that own the championship, the MotoGP championship. So they pretty much stick to the same format that's used in MotoGP.
Okay, cool.
That means we have practice on Friday, Saturday, and then the races on Sunday.
What kind of crowds do you get for those for that Spanish championship?
It depends. You know, it depends on the place. Albacete is probably where we get the strongest crowds, although this weekend they're predicting rain. So I don't know. Probably the biggest crowd is around 25,000, and the smallest maybe 10 or so. Because sometimes when we follow up after a GP, it's kind of tough to get everybody to get it back out there to the track after they just spent 3 days, at the GP.
Right. So dedicated fans only, but you know that's cool. I guess in Spain you got no shortage of dedicated fans. I mean they're around. You just gotta get them to come out. Where exactly is Albacete in Spain? Is it? It's its own city. The city is called Albacete, right?
Right. Yeah. Correct. It's pretty much in the center, close to Madrid, like about an hour and a half outside of Madrid, towards Valencia. In fact, I'm here with Liam, and he just told me he has a map on his thread.
Okay, cool. We will point people to that thread. That's the thread at Bay Area Writers Forum. And
Bay Area Writers Forum, right. Exactly.
Now, I was just checking out your website a little while ago, Kenny, and kind of running a little behind there on updating it. Is that going to be in the works, or what's going on there?
Yeah, it does need updating. In fact, when I get back to Barcelona, I gotta go over there to my friends and chase him around so he can get us back up to date.
Okay, cool. Didn't mean to put you on the spot there, but for anybody who's interested, as soon as Kenny gets it all updated, it's KennyNoyes.com, and of course we'll put a link in the show notes on that as well. And back to Albacete, I did have one more question on that. What would you compare it to weather-wise what's it like? What's the sort of natural surroundings like there? Is it like Southern California? Is it like Texas? You know, you following me?
Yeah, I do. It's actually kind of like Southern California, maybe. Yeah, it's kind of deserty area. It's not full on desert, but it's definitely not a humid climate. You know, and it is. I don't know the altitude, but it reminds me kind of like maybe. Not desert, but it's kind of high desert type climate.
Right, maybe like, I don't know, Bakersfield or something like that? Or
yeah, that's right. Yeah, like Bakersfield.
Okay, so for that's folks right. in America that are familiar with Bakersfield, yeah. Is it high enough altitude to start affecting the bikes at Albacete?
No. We run our settings pretty close to what we do. Like I said, I don't know the exact altitude,
right?
But I know it's not really high enough to affect that very much.
Okay, yeah. When you said you didn't, it sounded like sort of like, well, it's high, but I don't know exactly how high it is. But okay, I understand.
Yeah.
That's cool. And what's the track like? Is it a, what would you compare it to?
Well, it's hard because I don't have any references in the States, but as far as the tracks here in Spain, it's just smaller than Catalunya and Jerez. And even in Valencia, I mean, it's maybe 2.1. I'm not sure. It's a little bit smaller and a little bit more narrow than the GP tracks. But it has some really technical corners, and it's real flat. So grip is a big issue on this track.
Interesting. So
they did. Just a side note here. They did used to run World Superbike on this track. I think 97 was the last race.
Well, that's cool. I mean, you know, just like I said, I'm trying to get a sort of an idea of, you know, what the what it's like riding there in the national championship over in Spain. And of course, we, you know, not all the tracks are going to be big, gigantic stadium style, you know, Catalunya things. We know that, but it can still be a good track. And like you say, technically challenging and all that sort of thing. So that's cool. And you are riding a Yamaha R1? In Formula Extreme?
We're running that E, which they call it the LE in the States.
Oh, you've got one of those. Okay, cool.
Yeah, the limited edition.
Mm-hmm. And then do the Formula Extreme rules in Spain, do they allow you, I think we talked a little bit about this before, but let's touch on it again. Do they allow you a lot of modifications or just only a little bit of a modification over the, you know, homologation?
It's pretty close to super stock rules in the States.
Okay.
That's really, you know, the closest series that it is. Except we're allowed to run with, you can change slipper clutch. You don't have to use the one that comes standard on the bike.
Okay. But other than that, you're fairly limited then with the super stock rules,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, fairly limited. The motor, you can change the internal gear ratios, which I don't believe you can do in the States. And then you can also, I think you can change there's a few more things you can change in the engine.
Okay. But you are running slicks or street tires?
Slicks.
Slicks, okay.
Slicks. Huh. And it's open. It's not limited to one tire manufacturer. It's Michelin and Dunlop are the main players in the championship.
Okay. What do you ride on?
Michelin.
Michelin, cool. And in that championship, you said this is the first round of the season for you. Any expectations for the season? Any idea of what where you might be at?
For sure. I mean... last year we ended the season with fifth place and started on the front row, which is my first front row in Formula Extreme. And this year we just want to pick up where we left off and move up a little bit in the front group. You know, there's really five guys who are the front runners consistently in most of the races. And now we'll have, I imagine, we'll have Anthony running up there with us from the get-go. So, yeah, my expectation really is to be on the podium. And last week I had a crash in preseason testing. So we'll see. I have a hand a little bit sprained, and we'll see how that does, you know, for the whole race. I mean, I know I'll be good in qualifying and at the beginning of the race. I just don't know at the end if I'm going to be able to hang on to it as well.
Handles start getting tired, start painting, and yeah. Hope it doesn't affect you. So is Anthony Gobert your teammate? Is he also riding for Folk Endurance?
No, he's riding for Motorrad Suzuki.
Okay, Motorrad Suzuki. All right.
Actually, this year they call it Corona Suzuki. It's the Motorrad team that has a Corona sponsorship.
Right, but it's Corona cigarettes, not Corona beer, right?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay.
Correct.
So
it's Corona cigarettes.
For those of us over here in the States that it's all just so much stuff that we never see in the stores, except Corona beer. We see plenty of that. Well, speaking of Corona, so why don't we talk a little bit about, what was it now? It's been almost a couple weeks ago that you were in the World Supersport round there in Valencia, right? On the 21st through the 23rd of April, riding in a sort of a roundabout way for David Checa, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. And, I mean, people that probably, you know, people have watched the race. We got the race over here, so, you know, we were able to see it, and probably a lot of the international listeners are familiar with it, so we'll go ahead and talk about the results. Qualified pretty well, and you know, considering it looked like you were moving on up, what kind of happened there, Kenny? Just can you describe the problems you had?
Yeah, we know. I mean, exactly what it was. It was my first ride on a super sport bike since I first started road racing in 2001. When I was first learning how to ride, I started on a 600 and did five races, and then I went right to the 1000. So it was a big adjustment to go down to the 600. Although it was very fun. I mean, the R6 is a really good bike right out of the box. I mean, we hardly changed any settings on what David had run before, and it was amazing how easy it was to just get on a completely different motorcycle and within a few laps be up to pace. But the problem we had is that it rained off and on during the weekend, and we never got to run a set of race tires for more than 7 laps, because the only dry sessions that we had were qualifying sessions. And in the world scene, you have to run through tires, you know, pretty quickly to be able to put in a competitive time and qualify towards the front. So we just ran out of time on the endurance testing on the tire, and it also rained during the warm up in the morning, which by the way, we were 8th in. So when the race came around, after about lap 10, we really ran out of grip on the rear, and I just got caught off guard getting on the gas.
How was that crash? You weren't injured in that crash, were you? I mean, or was that just a little sore?
No, it was a real slow crash. I mean, another thing there is that, you know, I was using treaded Pirellis. That's the main thing, the main adjustment, you know, compared to a Michelin slick. They have quite a bit less grip, especially as the race goes on.
Sure.
So the way the crash was, it was the rear wheel broke loose, but it kind of spun around on me. You know, it started to slide, and I thought I was going to be able to control it, but it just never gripped again. So I just kind of slid out and low-sided, and I wasn't hurt. In fact, I got up and tried to continue, but the left foot peg broke, so I had to retire.
Yeah, well, that's a shame. That, you know, it's sad that you crashed, but I mean, overall, you did pretty well. For anybody that hasn't been following Supersport all that well, Kenny qualified 18th on the grid, right, Kenny?
We were 14th on Friday, and then on Saturday we did try to change a couple things with the gearing, and it went the wrong way, so we didn't improve, and we're moved back 18th. But it's real tight. That series is amazing how tight the groups are. So
yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, that's 18th. You know, out of 38 riders and everything, it's you had one race the first time you'd been in this series and everything. I think that's a pretty good result. And you were actually moving up in the lap charts. Looking at the lap charts, doesn't look like you got the best of start. But after that, you sort of started making up for that.
I got a horrible start. I think I reverted back to the way of starting 1000. You know, to not get it too wheelie, and I really bogged it off the line compared to everybody else. I think the first lap, I think I was 24th, I believe. And I came back to 15th. And I was actually, on a pace to catch the guys that were ahead of me in 13th and 14th. And probably even, I think I would have ended up 12th. But you got across the line. So.
Well, you know, overall, I mean, it could have been a whole lot worse, right? I mean, it's just, you know, it's these things happen, and I'm sure it's not the first time, and unfortunately, it probably won't be the last time for you, you know, to crash out of a race.
In
hopefully
fact,
it is.
In fact, it wasn't, you know, in fact, it wasn't two days later on, no, actually 3 days later on Wednesday, testing some new Michelin tires at Albacete is where I crashed and hurt my wrist.
And the crash, that was in a practice crash, right? And that's bad when you hurt yourself. You know, that's where you really don't want it to happen that way. But so, well, I really appreciate your time here on the phone. You know, taking a little break from your drive to Albacete. Where are you guys at? I can hear some like music or something in the background. Are you in a restaurant?
Yeah, it's a Spanish music back here. Yeah, we stopped at a cafe.
Oh, cool. So. I hope we're not interrupting, you know, your dinner or snack or whatever. It's fairly late over there, so well, actually, probably about dinner time in Spain, isn't it? It was 9:30 or so.
Over here, everything gets a little later.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they slot us in as if we were MotoGP in the Spanish Championship. So we practice at a comfortable 11 o'clock tomorrow. So.
Oh, well, that's good.
It's always nice.
So he can sleep in a little bit and recover from the drive. Outstanding. Well, all right, Kenny, appreciate the time on the phone, and we will definitely be, you know, we'll point some people towards your website, so get it updated, and we'll be, you know, let us know how you do in the CEV. It's almost impossible to find anything out about that series over here in the States, unless you're good
Spanish. We'll get that webpage updated next week for sure, and there'll be plenty of information on there about going to the United States. To do the Gunaseca and the other three races.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That we're planning on doing. So, if any of the listeners want to check in, it should be updated, if not next week, the one after that, for sure.
Okay, and then real quick, one more question before I let you go. You reminded me of that. You are racing in what class for the AMA as a wild card at Laguna Seca?
Yeah, I'm going to be racing an R1 LE, same as over here.
Okay.
And I'll be racing in Super Stock and also in Superbike. We're going to do an entry. I don't know if we'll actually do the race, but we're going to do an entry to get more lap time.
Right.
I mean, to get more track time over there, since I basically don't know the track.
Okay. Well, that'll be great to you know, for our folks over here to be able to see and everything like that. So that's going to be cool. Well, all right.
Really looking forward to that, going back to the States and seeing how everything is over there. I haven't really raced a road race there at all. I did a couple club races at Willow Springs before I came out here to Spain, but we're real excited about the whole trip there. So yeah, hope to see everybody out there.
Cool, definitely. We hope to see you do well in it too. So we'll be watching for you.
Well,
ready. So thanks a lot, Kenny.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, now we got Liam on the phone. Liam, over in Spain, he's our man in Spain. How you doing, Liam?
Hey, I'm doing great. Good to talk to you, Bob. I'm really glad that we managed to put Kenny on the show and you know, add yet another facet to the ever interesting world of MotoGP OD.
Cool. Thanks. Yeah, it's always good to talk to a real racer. Kenny doing over there, his super sport appearance and all that. That was kind of fun to talk to him and appreciate his time. What's been happening as far as your whole vision quest of you know, lining up your mechanic job in MotoGP or World Superbike or wherever you can? How's things going over there?
Well, it's sort of a play it by ear. I was supposed to go to Monza, Italy for the Superbike round this weekend, but one thing fell through and another thing fell through, and while a couple things did work and would have worked out had I gone there, it just seemed like it was a little too last minute, and as much as I like to fly by the seat of my pants, I really thought that my time would be better spent helping Kenny this weekend in Albacete at the first Formula Extreme race. Kenny and I became friends about 6 months ago when I first moved to Spain, and because we're both interested in road racing, naturally, you know, that's the basis of our friendship. And then I tested with him, working for him. He hired me to be his personal mechanic and then also work a little bit with the team that he races for here in Spain. And that turned out to be pretty fun and educational for me. And I'm always trying to learn new things, new technologies, especially when race bikes are concerned. And I think I'm going to change a little bit of my focus. I definitely am going to be working on the telemetry system on Kenny's bike. It's fairly new with a lot of different sensors, and it's only going to make me a better mechanic and have a more complete understanding of the race bikes to work with this system. So Kenny's been testing a lot of interesting parts in preparation for his assault on the AMA, which, you know, I don't want to blow that out of proportion, but I really relate to Kenny in that he's an American that came over to Spain to try his hand at road racing. And, you know, with his various appearances and the variety of racing that he does, he's not locked into one series or one particular style of riding. He trains frequently riding supermoto with a lot of the GP guys, often goes out riding supermoto with Ruben Chow and Tony Elias. So he does such a variety of things that it really reminds me of me. Just, you know, whatever phone call you get first in the morning, that's where you jump. And with his riding in the endurance racing, which it's a different bike and a different motor. He rides R1s predominantly, but in the Formula Extreme, the specification of the bike is halfway between AMA Super Stock and AMA Superbike. So the engines are massaged a little bit, and there's definitely upgraded suspension and wheels and whatnot, wheels, brakes. The motors are a little juicier. But then when you get on the endurance bike is just a hair off of World Superbike power level. It's naturally detuned so it can last, and it will run on the 98-octane pump gas that they have here, but it really, really takes off when you put in the race fuel. So, you know, he rides different types of machinery and different classes and different series. I mean, from World Endurance Championship, which he's got World Championship points now, to the Spanish Endurance Championship, the Spanish Formula Extreme Championship, and then also with his guest ride in World Supersport. You know, I had an AMA this year. He's got a busy schedule, you know, when he asked me to lend a hand, I jumped at the chance, especially because anytime I work on bikes, I get a real charge out of it. I mean, that's the reason why I came out here, and I just love being around bikes. So I'm really hoping that we click really well together, and I can help with any kind of advice or support that I can give. And it's just one American helping out another American overseas. It's really nice.
Cool. Wow. That's fascinating. I didn't realize he was riding all those different bikes and everything. Should have been talking to him about that stuff.
It's also a small world in that Kenny rode in World Supersport at the third round of the series in Valencia, and the previous two rounds, the bike was guest ridden by Anthony Govert, and I had a chance to sit down with Anthony Govert in Valencia, so I've spoken with him quite a bit about the bike, and then I've actually spoken to Kenny about it, so now I have two riders that have ridden the same bike in the same series, and just their views on the bike and the handling and the motor. You know, it's neat to get two different viewpoints that are remarkably similar despite the different riding styles that they both have.
Sure, that is, and that's... Sorry about that. That was what kind of threw me off a little bit, where I thought that Anthony Govert was going to be teaming up with Kenny in the CEV, because, you know, they had both ridden that same R6 in World Supersport. But so in any
right.
case, though,
so no, they'll be going head to head,
right?
And puts me in a strange position because now I'm friends with both of them. But wherever I hang my wrenches, is that's the guy I want to win.
Oh yeah,
so it's full steam ahead for Kenny Noyes and
cool.
me.
Cool.
And Anthony's going to be riding a Suzuki 1000, an 06 Gixxer 1000, and Kenny will have the Yamaha. Both have about the same level of factory involvement in terms of support and special parts. And I'm hoping that doing the work with the telemetry system on Kenny's bike is going to make a crucial difference and help put him further ahead as the season progresses. Because it is a long season, and then there's quite a long break in between the seven races, which is why Kenny's going to have the time and the opportunity to go contest in the AMA in a couple of rounds. So, who knows? Hopefully I'm coming back to Laguna Seca.
Yeah, that's what you mentioned.
I'll have yet another reason to be there.
Yeah, so have you solidified that plan or not yet? You were saying that you hope to, but it's still hoping, or?
I think it's pretty solid. I haven't had the time to sit down with my calendar and really hammer out the concrete dates, because I might have some other business projects going on this summer here in Barcelona, working again with Movistar. and I just have to play it by ear, and hopefully in the next 2 weeks I can nail down some concrete dates and say, hey, I'm going to be in California, maybe I'll make an appearance somewhere and talk about motorcycles and life and dreams and what it takes. I've definitely seen a lot already in the 6 months I've been out here. And about the World Supersport bike, I think that even though the motor's been breathed on, it didn't seem to have a lot down low, which is why if you watch all three races, you'll see that both Anthony and Kenny had not the best starts. But both of them made it back through the pack.
Right.
So the bike shows a lot of potential. It definitely handles well.
Yeah. Sorry,
I kind of went off on a different tack there, but
that's okay. I was kind of wondered, but that's cool. It's good information. We like hearing that kind of stuff. So,
well, once I start thinking about bikes, it's all a jumble.
Sure.
Speed and wheels, right?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Good stuff. And now, when
Let's
you said
see,
you
what else?
Well, when you were
go
supposed
ahead.
When you were supposed to go to Monza for World Superbike, who was that with?
That would have been more as a freelance thing. I've begun writing some magazine articles and testing the waters of journalism. My photography has improved to the level where I can feel comfortable posting photos on the internet. And while none of the U.S. publications seem to really be interested in any of my pictures, I do find myself in strange places, and hopefully I'll get a neat shot one of these days.
Sure.
And also, I've begun writing for a Swedish road racing magazine, which will probably be out within a month. I'm their international correspondent who covers events in MotoGP and World Superbike. So I'm proud to say that now I'm a contributor to a magazine, and I think sometime near Laguna Seca we'll find that I'm a contributor for another prominent magazine sold in the United States. I just don't want to give it away.
All right,
excited
that's
about.
Cool. That's outstanding. What's your Swedish magazine? Can you pronounce the name for us?
Svensk Road Racing.
All right. So,
I'll send you a link to the website.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd like to see that. I'm not 100% sure if we have listeners in Sweden, but we have them all over the place, so I wouldn't be surprised if we have at least a couple. And if you're out there, pick up a copy of Svensk Road Racing. Oh, you do.
I believe you have two listeners in Sweden.
Okay. Not sure how. I guess how you know that because they mentioned it talking to you, or?
Yes, I think a lot of feedback that you and I get is related. I'm sure people that listen to the show might have checked out my thread or found some information out about me, and vice versa. I've mentioned on the thread that, hey, you know, great place to get information is MotoGPOD, and it's true. And people bounce back and forth. It's definitely true that motorcycle people were hungry for the technology, were hungry for the information. And right now it just doesn't seem like there's enough media outlets providing that for the U.S. people.
Right.
So hopefully one day, you know, with my experiences out here and in the future, I'll be able to put something together and we'll see some of it come to fruition.
Cool. No, there's definitely lots of room for different things. I think, you know, like the nice thing about a podcast is people can listen to it on the way to work or whatever like that. They don't have to be watching TV or sitting at a computer or something. And then there's always room for
Absolutely.
Good websites. So, yeah. Speaking of coverage and excitement in general and everything, what about Istanbul? I know.
Oh, my goodness
yeah.
gracious. That's all I can say. I don't want to say anybody was absolutely flying. But my God, what a bunch of races. All of them. And I'll have to preface this and say that when I first saw the races, I only saw snippets in that I was working during a six-hour endurance race for Kenny's team, Fulch Endurance, and I would time my tire changes to coincide with the beginning of the race and then the last four or five laps of the race so that I knew, okay, I got to get these tires to the Michelin truck, and the Michelin truck had a TV set up in their van, so I was able to watch the first laps and the last laps. And then it wasn't until I got back to Barcelona and rested for a day that I was able to log on to MotoGP.com and watch the races, and that just, you know, it fleshed it out. But, man, what a bunch of races. I was amazed by the qualifying results, and even more amazed as the races played out. I think it was so critical in previous years where you qualified because you knew you could go up three places or down three places. But after Istanbul in the MotoGP race, we saw guys moving up 14 places, 16 places. Rossi himself moved up several places. I mean, just an incredible charge through the pack. It's a testament to the tires, that the Michelins, that they were able to work their bike so hard in the initial laps and make up those positions in the first half of the race, and then the tire performance didn't drop off. So I really want to commend Michelin on that. And about Bridgestone, you know, they were trying something new, and Sete and John Hopkins tried a new tire. And with the changing conditions that they had to practice and qualify, you know, it was a big risk and a gamble. And I think after not logging any wins or podiums, you know, they went for that gamble, and it unfortunately didn't pay off. But we have to understand that Bridgestone hasn't been a player at that level for very long. And every time they go out there, whether it's to win with Flores or, you know, after the unfortunate Istanbul race, you know, they're doing their homework and they're going to learn from it. So it just bodes better for the series that people are committed, and I'm sure we'll see better results from the Bridgestones in China.
Yeah.
It's these bikes are under constant development, and everyone always seems to forget that.
Yeah, well, yeah, that is true. Every race is somehow different in one way or the other. There were some pictures posted. You might have seen them. The thread on rideon2.com, they had a thread of some photos of one of Rossi's bike. I'm not sure where the bike was set up at, but you know, photos of the bike, and there's comments on there about the size of the sprocket, the rear sprocket, which could have just been that they basically put any old sprocket on there, but things like that. And every combination is different. As I'm not telling you anything, you don't know, but you know, each race you're gonna have a whole different slew of stuff going on, right? So Shanghai coming up here in just about a week and a half.
About a week and a half.
Yeah, that'll. It's going to be an interesting circuit because that's another one of the big Formula One circuits. Not really my favorite. I think it's a little bit featureless.
It's not a lot of the riders' favorites either.
Yeah.
And I think particularly when you see a track that a lot of people don't like, the racing tends to be closer. So I think I'm hoping it's going to be an exciting race. I was really happy about the 250 result in Istanbul.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I know Hero personally, and I was just glad he kept his head down, stayed out of trouble, and it paid off with a win. I was also really impressed that for its third race out this year, the KTM brought home a victory.
Right.
That says a lot. That says a lot.
Right.
And they're not resting on their laurels. KTM will debut a new chassis for Hero in Shanghai in a week and a half. So
cool.
That company is on the move as far as their 250 program.
Yeah, they want to be involved. They definitely do, and that's a good thing. I mean, it got off to a bit of a shaky start on the 250 KTM, but seems like Hero's doing real well on it. You know, clocked in a win. He qualified, sixth in Istanbul? And
yep.
You know, looking at the lap chart, actually.
Yeah, the race was slower this year than last year. I noticed that myself. I can't remember if it was 20 seconds slower or 40 seconds slower. So, I don't know if that's because there wasn't just a runaway winner, but Stoner won it last year, and you saw how well he did in MotoGP when he moved up this year.
It was amazing, yeah. But also,
beautiful performance.
Yeah, something possibly due to the weather at all? I mean, was it real windy?
I'm sure of it. Yeah. I'm sure of it. Yeah. Just too tricky.
Yeah.
Also, whenever you're riding next to somebody or someone's pushing you from behind or you're chasing somebody, whenever there's that extra mental pressure and tension going on, it can go one of two ways. Either a pack can either get away from everybody and draft on one another and create faster lap times, but more likely it tends to slow everybody down just a little bit. A little bit more apprehension going into every corner, a little bit more paying attention to where everyone else is, and that can slow lap times down.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, we see it all the time where you've got the leader will start breaking away while the guys that are in second, third, and fourth are kind of battling with each other to catch
right.
him, and they basically they're all hurting each other's times, but you know, it's just that's the way it is.
I actually have to run.
Oh,
so
okay.
Time to get to the track. If you'd like, why don't you give us a call on Sunday night about this time?
Okay, thinking what's going on. I have a Navy weekend this weekend, so I won't be able to call you at this time. I can call you a lot later.
Okay.
If that's
okay.
We'll
probably be on the road till midnight, at least.
Well, midnight your time?
We'll see it. We'll play it by ear.
We'll figure it out. I should be able to send you an email or something, or if I call you, you know, I don't know. Do you turn your cell phone off at night? Otherwise, I'll call you in the middle of the night.
No, I don't.
So,
Yeah, shoot me an email. I'll be able to reply to you, I think, at the press office here at the racetrack.
Alrighty. And that sounds
thanks
good.
Thanks to everybody for listening to MotoGPOD. I hope you guys enjoy yourselves and keep the racing going. My God, what a season, huh?
Yep, definitely. And thank you very much for being on the show, Liam, and we will talk to you again as soon as we can.
Okay. Take care, Bob. Bye.
All right, that's going to do it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. This is Bob Hayes saying thank you very much for downloading it and for listening to it, at least this long. And as always, if you want to send an email with comments, questions, suggestions, hate mail, whatever, address is always motogpod@motogpod.com. And if you have comments for Jim Race, who was the guest host for last couple weeks, if you remember, and has done a show with me, his email address is race@motogpod.com. And while we're talking about that, make sure to check out the MotoGPOD site for those links that I mentioned, that Nikki Hayden, Max Biaggi Supermoto video that was on Google, and the other links and stuff that I mentioned. Make sure you check them out. And then check out rideon2.com for their forum there, and also check out forum.motorcyclepodcastgroup.com. to participate in those various discussions and stuff. A lot of good stuff going on. A lot of people out there that have a lot of good opinions, and it's always interesting to talk to them. So if you get a minute, go ahead and check those forums out, and hopefully you'll have a good time. And in any case, until next time, ride safe, enjoy the spring riding weather, and we will talk to you with our Shanghai preview show next May 12th, it will be. So ready for the May 14th Shanghai MotoGP. Is this on? Hello? Hello, can you hear me now? I don't think this is on. Hello, hello? Can you hear me now? Oh, well, whatever. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.